Hello and a warm welcome to the TNC podcast, your go-to Norwich City listen, alongside BBC Radio North, of course. We are joined by the voice of Norwich City.
Hey, Chris.
Chris Gorham.
Hey, Jack.
Two Chrises.
Nice
God,
to
this
be
is,
here.
This is troublesome.
And we discussed that this is actually Chris's third time on the TNC podcast.
Not so many have done that.
Third time lucky, maybe.
Yeah. Usually usually people do two and then go...
So presumably there's some kind of hat-trick ball or...
You can wear the hat.
Yeah, here you go, Chris. We'll get you in the captain's hat.
Maybe. We'll have to think of something special. How's things? It's been a topsy-turvy year.
Well, it has. I can't quite believe we're already... two games to go in a season where it feels like so much has happened, yet it's gone so quickly. But I'll be honest, I think at the start of the season, the idea of Norwich being in the top six, with it all in their own hands with two games to go, I would absolutely have taken this. I didn't think this was realistically on this season, so I'm happy.
It feels strange, doesn't it, Chris? Because we keep talking about this run-in. I'm not sure we can call it a run-in now. I've got two games left. I keep thinking there's sort of 10 games to go or something.
Just take it. Just take what you can, Jack, because... After the turgid winter that we had and the really poor performances and results, this is now, just take it, enjoy it, get carried away in this moment. And as Chris has rightly said, you know, to be in this position now, in pole position with a couple of games to go is a really solid place to be.
Expectations are a funny thing, aren't they? Because I think pre-season we would have gone, well, we should hope to be at the top six. The squad is good. The budget's fairly big in terms of the league. And then we went through what happened in October and such, and we were going, if we survive, that'll be okay. And now we're in the top six.
Well,
and going,
hang on, no, you mentioned relegation.
It was getting a bit sketchy.
You mentioned relegation. I told you to bugger off at that point as well.
But now we're there, we're going, oh, it's happening.
Yeah, I think 17th in November, that Blackburn game has become the accepted low point, hasn't it? And I think then I wasn't that concerned about relegation, but it looked more likely than promotion at that point, didn't it? But my expectations going into the season were we weren't going to go up automatically because you saw what was coming down from the Premier League, that the strength at Leicester and Leeds and Southampton. I didn't think Norwich would quite be top six. Mm. And my reason for that was I remembered how last season had ended, where, let's not forget, Norwich, and I think this is why David Wagner deserves quite a lot of credit, actually. The end of last season, Norwich didn't score a goal at Carrow Road after February. Do you remember that?
I've erased that from my mind.
So this is, I think this is the context as to what
Thanks,
we were
Chris.
Going into.
I
so the last goal at Carrow Road that Norwich scored last season was when they beat Cardiff in February.
Were we that shit?
That's how bad it was.
Oh, God.
And then you had that squad that was really limping towards the end of the season, and you knew that squad was about to lose Pukki. Mm. It was about to lose Max Aarons. We all thought Andrew Omabamadeli was about to go, and he did, and Tim Krul was going as well. So you had a team that was struggling, that had finished 13th in the table and was about to lose all those players. And David Wagner and Stuart Webber at the time had one summer to plug all of those gaps, not have any real freedom financially, and yet build a team that could do better than 13th. Mm. And actually, they've taken the scenic route, and there have been times this season where I've thought...
That's so well put.
Yeah, there have been times this season where I've thought, maybe this isn't going to work, but... Yes, of course, there's plenty of room for improvement, and it's not been perfect. But when you consider where Norwich were a year ago, being in the top six now and scoring the goals that they're scoring, having lost those players, I think is a success. It's not a success in terms of they could do... Of course, there is more to come, they could do so much better. But in relative terms, the last 12 months for Norwich City, they have moved in the right direction.
I really want your opinion on just... how mad this turnaround is for David Wagner, right? Because, you know, you and I have both, we've all seen, you know, some really bad stints over the years, right? And that Blackburn game felt like doomsday. It could have been the end quite easily. Perhaps it was Cardiff away when Adam Eade got that last gasp goal as well. So what are your thoughts on David Wagner? Because we get carried away on here, don't we, Jack? We get emotional, proudly so. But you, Chris, you are a steady Eddie, and I love you for that, right? So what is your opinion?
I don't think I've been called a steady Eddie.
No, is it like you don't get too high, you don't get too low, and that's a massive compliment.
It's like the Mark Edworth.
So really?
I thought that's what you're getting at,
of Norwich City Media.
What do I think about Wagner? So yes, I was sharing the same worries as you in November. Mm-hmm. Again, we'll go back to the Blackburn game. When we were leaving Carrow Road after that game, Norwich's run was so poor. It was it one win in 10 or something like that, wasn't it? I know this is, I've not brought my commentary notebook with me because I know this is more vibes based, isn't it, this, than stats based. So I'm doing it off the top of my head.
You're working well with the vibes.
One win in 10, and I think it was such a poor performance. And it was one of those games where we thought we've got to win today, and they were 2-0 down after 20 minutes, whatever it was. And that, we've been there before. Exactly. We've been there before with managers. It would have been no surprise to have seen David Wagner leaving the ground with his belongings in a cardboard box that day, would it? Put them in the back of his car, that's it. But I don't know what happened. I'd love to know what happened. They stuck with him. And if you take that Blackburn game as the starting point, Norwich, of the record they've had since, I think I'm right in saying, is second only to Leeds in terms of championship points. So if they had, this is the point I've said a lot on the radio this season, if they had changed the manager on that day and brought in a new manager, and that new manager had done what Wagner has done, we'd be talking about statues and what a job this is, what a turnaround. we'd be saying, oh, they never would have gone to Ipswich and got a point there with Wagner. True. So I think from that position, yes, of course, he has to take responsibility for getting to that position. But the way he's pulled it round, the way the squad has pulled together, and in some games recently as well, the way the atmosphere and the fans are all coming together as well.
Yes.
This didn't seem possible 4 or 5 months ago.
I want to ask you, sorry, Jack, I really want to ask you, Chris, because you speak to David every week, right? How have you observed him? Because one of the things that we've complimented him for is he's always held himself incredibly well, ever the professional, a really good communicator of what he wants and what he's trying to do. What has it been like, you know, actually speak with him? Can you, again, going with that vibes coming, can you feel the vibes of he knew the writing was on the wall? And is there a difference now in terms of how he's holding himself?
Yeah, I think, you know, all football managers, they don't like being asked questions about their future and when they're in trouble, but they've all been there. They all know when you've only won one win in 10 that those questions are going to come. And he didn't deal with them in a particularly combative way. I think he knew at the time he couldn't, because the performances, they just lost 6-2 at Plymouth. Yes, there were injuries and all of that. You know, you had results that he couldn't stand by. But there was a real change in him, and that was around, I think, the win against Watford, if you remember that, we'll look back as a real turning point in the season, because that was just as Norwich had turned the corner and was starting to look like a top six position was on. And yet they went from 2-0 up to 2-2 that night, and the crowd started to turn again
a
little bit.
Right, yeah.
And that was the night that Wagner came out afterwards and said, look, you know, our results have been better recently. We need the crowd to go with us.
Oh, he had a bit of a bite.
That's it. I think at that point there were about 12 games to go.
Yeah.
And we all knew at that point, David Wagner's here now for the season. Mm. And that felt like a bit of a watershed moment. Mm. And then played Cardiff a few days later and played them off the park and beat them handsomely. And that, looking back, feels like a really big week now, because when a head coach or manager gets to the point that he's calling out the crowd, it doesn't usually end well.
Exactly.
But he timed his run perfectly. He waited until they'd won a game and they were in good form. And since then, I think the feeling around the club, you'll notice this in the stands as well, I think there's been a real, right, let's forget what's gone before, let's roll our sleeves up and get the job done.
There's certainly more of it.
Yeah,
there's certainly more togetherness than there was.
There
definitely is,
and I know there are still doubts, and
you
have a throwaway 2-0 lead at Sheffield Wednesday, and the same criticism resurface, but I think the last couple of months there's been a real change in the atmosphere at Carrow Road, the mood of the club, the mood of the fans, and a real sense of, we can do this.
Yes, I agree.
I think the amazing thing is as well, Chris, the expectation now at home is, oh, whoever it is, we'll just win.
Yeah.
And I've seen so many Norwich City performances in the last 2-3 years where the weekend game against Bristol City, we lose that couple, 2-0, Angus Gunn, brilliant.
Yeah.
It shows how good this squad is, that whoever rocks up at Carrow Road, we're not scared of them.
Yeah. But not to go all Roy Keane on you, we should be winning our home games in the Championship against whoever we play, because we've got the players, we've got the calibre of players, we've got the experienced players to do that. And so, yeah, it's good. The run's been brilliant, but we should be beating the teams that are rocking up to Carrow Road, because let's be honest, and Chris isn't going to say because he's a BBC boy, they're fucking shit.
BBC
he's
boy.
Called you steady, Eddie.
Hang on. What did you say I'm not going to say?
What did I say?
You said they're...
You're not going to slag off any...
They're fucking shit.
No, I'm not going to say that. Pardon the interruption. I'm not going to say
Bristol
that.
Too average.
Okay.
No. Yeah, no. They are one of maybe five, which is an exception, right? Yeah. I don't think... They were definitely one of the best teams that we played.
We're talking about steady Eddies. I mean, Preston and Bristol City are exactly that, aren't they? I don't think they've ever been in another division other than the Championship in their entire existence. Let's talk about Saturday then. It was a strange one. I mean, I still feel like I'm sort of calming down from the Ipswich performance somewhat. It was a spectacular day. Mm-hmm. The performance was great. The atmosphere was brilliant. Actually, 1-1 against Bristol City, not the end of the world, but it just felt a little bit, I don't know.
Yeah, it's when you've won 8 home games in a row, that run's going to end at some point. And 8 is enough for people to have got that winning feeling back again. And as you say, expect to turn up and win. It was never going to be the same as the Ipswich game, because it's not an East Anglian derby with a team that's above Norwich in the table with a point to prove. And almost having won at Preston the week before, that put Norwich in such a strong position. I think the sense was, well, we've got 2 home games to maybe get a win and we're going to be in the playoffs. So for the atmosphere to really be at the top level, I think a game has to have a bit of jeopardy on it. You either have to be the underdog, or you feel like you really need to win that game. But Norwich have played so well. They've been on this good run. They're not going to get top 2, but they've got just a little bit of work to do to be in the playoffs. And I think that's why it perhaps was a little bit flatter than it has been. But and the performance as well. Norwich, David Wagner said afterwards, they weren't as at it. They weren't as good as they have been in a lot of games recently. But that does happen. You remember the amount of games under Paul Lambert or under Daniel Farke when Norwich were promoted that they won by 1 goal. They needed something really late. They weren't all 4-5-0 comfortable every week.
True, very true. And there's a lot of revisionism that happens over the years. Yeah. So actually, that's a very, very good point made. I was disappointed with the atmosphere, I have to say. Although, and Kenny McLean says this himself, that you know it's a two-way tango, right? They have to give us something. I don't think they gave the fans enough to really go for it at the weekend. I just don't.
The drum broke as well.
Did it?
Yeah.
Did the drum actually break?
The drum broke.
Because
it got really
How
quiet.
How do you know
up?
That? The drum broke.
Well, because I saw the drum being escorted out of the Barclays.
Really?
It went rather quiet after about half an hour. I didn't know if it was kind of a musical tinge that they were going with, like sort of quieting and then, you know, getting really loud. But yeah, the drum was broke.
Well, so is it going to be back for a full return on Saturday?
Well, I don't know if it's going through a late fitness test. I'm not too sure. But yeah, the drum had broke, which didn't help.
No, it didn't. But what I would say in really on the side of the fence of like, now we need to win on Saturday against Swansea, right? We need to. I don't fancy Birmingham away on the
Well, let's go through the possible happenings, because you get to this stage in the season, don't you? And there's so much that can change. The title race is balmy at the moment. They all play each other.
Yeah.
Hull and Coventry are chasing us. Coventry have obviously had their FA Cup incident. So what is needed from Norwich now in the last couple of weeks from a man that has actually done some prep with this?
Well, I hope my reading is right now that you've given the big build-up. Norwich have got 72 points. I think the most that Hull can get is 75. And I think the most that Coventry can get is 75. But they can't both get 75 because they've got to play each other on Wednesday.
Got you.
So 75 is the target, really. Yep. Norwich need 1 win from 2 games to get that. And if they do, then either Hull or Coventry are going to have to win all of the rest of their games, and then it'll come down to goal difference.
And interestingly, Hull and Coventry both play the blue and white boys as well.
So
there's a lot of talk of, you know, obviously finishing fifth is usually stronger because fifth play fourth and third play sixth. It's still difficult to say, isn't it, at this stage, because we don't know who's going to finish third. I mean, what do you think would be the best option?
I don't know, because, as you say, I think that you look at the top 4 teams in the division, and if Norwich finish 5th or 6th, they're going to play one of those teams. And there's, well, wherever you look, it's narrative time, isn't it? You've either got Russell Martin, you've got Daniel Farke, you've got Ipswich Town, or you've got Leicester City.
So who do you fancy? Come on, get off the fence.
So I would say 5th or 6th, I don't mind. Let's just get it done
Done. Don't care.
Yeah, whether you finish, if you finish 5th or 6th, you are going to be away from home second, aren't you?
Yes.
Fifth or sixth.
Right, yeah.
So there's no difference to me. Yeah. I think we all know Norwich's issues away from home this season. So that's the big nagging thing we've got, isn't it? That we are, whoever we end up playing in the playoffs, if indeed that happens, you're going to have to go away from home and do the job second. So I don't know. I can't pick it.
No, you need to know.
I can't pick it because
who do you fancy? Who do you fancy to knock out in the semis?
The results we've done better against Ipswich, haven't we? As the season's gone on, I don't think I could stand it. I don't think I could stand it.
So, I'd rather them in the semis than at Wembley.
Yeah, I don't think I could. Yeah, I think that would be almost.
But think
too
about
much.
The iconic commentary, Chris.
Well,
you'll be writing out your poetry before the game.
There's
kicks
a lot
off.
To get to before we get to that point.
I think if I was to pick one for the semis, it would be Southampton. I've watched a lot of them this season, And I think that, you know, I love Russ and I love what his philosophy is about. I think they look beatable. And both the times we've played them, I know we got a little bit lucky at Carrow Road against them. Should have done
the,
them away
the 4-4 from home. Down there. Yeah. It was an incredible game, wasn't it? So, yeah, I think, but you imagine, it, of course, the Ipswich one is the one that everyone's thinking about. Mm. But if it's not Ipswich, you could have a playoff semi-final with Russell Martin standing there at Carrow Road. And, or you could have Daniel Farker standing there at Carrow in a playoff.
Yeah, I wouldn't want that. So that's the one I'm scared of. So I don't want Farker in the playoffs.
You look at it either way, and it could be Leicester got that important win at the weekend, so they were in pole position to go up. So Norwich in the playoffs are very likely either going to come up against one of their old favourites or their biggest rival. So whatever happens, it's going to be massive.
So let us know, however and wherever you're watching this, who do you want? Where do you want to finish?
Have you seen enough from Norwich in recent weeks to give you a degree of confidence going into the playoffs if we get there?
I am with... No, come on. We're there. We'll beat Swansea, we're there. I'm confident at home. I'm with Chris. I'm confident at home. Away from home, not so sure. And as I say, I am scared of playing Leeds. I don't want Leeds. I want them nowhere near us. And I did, like, my ultimate, you know, dream come true would be Ipswich get knocked out in the semis, and then the final's a lottery anyway, isn't it? That's the dream for me. So, but no, I am confident. I think at the moment this Norwich City side can beat any team in the league in a one-off game, particularly with Sargent, Johnny Rose coming back now from full fitness, some more minutes in the tank against Bristol City. So I think we've got the capability to do that. Yeah. You know, it's a lottery now.
It is, but I think Jack said a minute ago that Norwich have got the squad to compete at the top of the Championship. I'd say they've got the team to do it, but maybe not the squad. Because
if there's
two things that are nagging me at the moment, one is having to go away in the second leg.
Yeah.
And you know, can Norwich do it there under those sort of circumstances? The other one is one big injury or one red card or one suspension over the next couple of weeks is a problem, because Norwich don't have the strength and depth of some of those other teams at the top of the table. We've seen it this season. We've seen when big players have been missing, and you only have to go back to what we were saying about Blackburn and all of that earlier on. We've seen how the form has tailed off. So Norwich, it does seem as if they've got Rowe coming back. Hopefully Hanley and Newlis aren't far away. So actually, at the moment, it feels as if Norwich's squad is getting stronger at the right time.
Yes.
There was a bit at the end of the Bristol City game, I'm not sure whether you remember, because it was all over quite quickly, but there was that bit of a dust-up, wasn't there? With Kenny McLean was involved, Sarah was involved.
Yes,
and I was thinking...
Unlike Gabby, by the way.
Yeah, but I was thinking, in the pessimist in me was thinking, a red card here is a three-game ban, so you're missing the first leg of the playoffs.
Blimey, so
this is where... That's the sort of thing, the sort of thread that this is hanging on.
I love
on
that that's you. I was just going, God,
I
love that. So sensible. We're like, yeah, a bit of passion. Brilliant.
There's a balance. Of course, you want to see that, but.
Bit of passion,
at the same
not too
time,
much.
You don't. It's not worth missing a playoff semi final over, is it?
I love it.
It's interesting because if we cast our minds back to the last time we were in the playoffs, and that couldn't have gone better, really. It's Ipswich semi finals, beat them. So routine at Wembley, it's not going to be like that again. But people keep saying, well, you've played Ipswich in a semi-finals before, and I keep saying it was so different then.
Yeah.
They kind of scraped in, I think Daryl Murphy had got them over the line a little bit. They were never expecting to be there. It would be different this time, wouldn't it? I mean, what were your thoughts, what were your memories from that kind of 2015
campaign? I think Norwich had finished third, hadn't they, I think, going into that. So we were the better team in the playoffs. And I think because... ultimately, the deal was done a couple of games before the end of the season. We didn't have that heartbreak of missing out on automatic promotion on the last day. So I think mindset was right for the playoffs, and they went into it knowing they had the best team and the best squad of the four teams in it. Norwich are probably going to be fifth or sixth, so stands to reason they're not going to have the best team, the best squad in the playoffs. So they are going to need to channel a different spirit, that sort of underdog mentality, aren't they, to get them through it this time. But they can do it. We've seen it a lot in this second half of the season. Again, you go back to David Wagner's recent results. I think I'm right in saying they have only lost 3 out of 19 league games now.
It's impressive.
And it doesn't feel like that because they've had a few disappointing draws away from home. But since the turn of the year, they've lost at Leeds, they've lost at Leicester, and they lost at Middlesbrough with 10 men. having started quite well. Yeah. That's the only league games Norwich have lost.
And even the Leicester before. I mean, Leeds felt like they were always the better team.
But there was a long spell in that second half because it was only 1-0.
Sarah missed a good chance.
Where the Leeds fans around us were really rattled and really concerned. We just couldn't quite force that equaliser. But yeah, I know that there are a lot of games that people will now be mentioning that we could have got more out of, particularly away from home. But 3 defeats in 19.
It's good. It's good.
Norwich are in better form going into the playoffs than you would perhaps expect the fifth or sixth place team to be.
I actually think I'd rather be the underdog than third place. I like a bit of that dirty fight. And this squad that we've got, this team that we've got, I think they thrive off that. We've said this on the podcast before. The story here would be even better than the story that happened in that famous Ipswich semi-final, etc. season. I think the story would be absolutely epic.
Well, you want an Ipswich atmosphere like we had a couple of weeks ago. If you go into the playoffs in third place and you've just missed out on automatic promotion,
you're not going to get that.
I think you're a bit jittery as you've got so much to lose. Yes. I think if you go into it in Norwich's position, that's your best chance of getting that atmosphere. Yeah. And the Ipswich atmosphere was... It was amazing. It caught me slightly by surprise because those early Saturday games often can fall a bit flat, can't they? Even on Derby Day. Mm. But it was electric, the atmosphere.
What was it like, Chris, when obviously with Nunez... Well, actually, Nunez' goal is one thing, but what was it like at the final whistle in the gantry? That must have been epic.
Oh, it was absolutely incredible. We have a microphone that we sellotape to the gantry and dangle over the crowd. It's all right, it's not going to fall on anyone, don't worry. Just to pick up that atmosphere. And during that game against Ipswich, we had to keep turning it down because it was just picking up too much noise. And that tells you a story. It was, I spoke to a great Norwich fan who you'll know, Judy Trivett, after the game. We bumped into her outside the ground. And she's a Norwich fan who's been going for goodness knows how many years, decades and decades. And she's not prone to overstatement. Norwich fans of that long aren't, are they?
Don't know anyone else like that.
And she said that was right up there with the best I've ever heard Carrow Road. Mm. So I think... if you were to get a similar game, whoever it was against, actually, I mean, definitely if it was against Ipswich, but I actually think a playoff semi-final against one of those teams that's finished above Norwich, I think it'll be back.
Just on the topic of atmosphere, I really want to make this point so super clear, right? And the hashtag for this podcast this week to prove that you've listened is hashtag sing up for Swansea.
Nice.
Right? And
well, hang on, we're swinging up against Swansea, aren't we?
Ooh.
Sing up.
That sounds like you're supporting Swansea.
Sing up for Swansea. Yeah. Sing up against Swansea. Right, just sing up something. Just sing up. Hashtag sing up something, all right? I want to hear more noise. We need to get over the line. We need all four stands singing, clapping, going mental. Because that's what happened against Ipswich, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It wasn't just, oh, the Barkley and the Snake Pit will do that. And I think one of the things that I'm getting a little bit frustrated with at the moment is there's a lot of moaning going on about the atmosphere after Saturday. But I can almost guarantee that at least 50% of those people moaning aren't actually helping to produce the atmosphere themselves. You need to take responsibility wherever you're sitting to clap, to make noise, to stand up, to go crazy, right? To sing. We need all four stands for Swansea. So important. Sing up for Swansea.
Absolutely.
Oh, no, I'm not convinced. You know, it's four Swansea. It's the four Swansea. Sure.
They'll need some help. It's a long trip down from South Wales.
But they can sing there, Jack. We're on stereotypes. We'll have to be on our best voice, won't we?
We will.
What about out-sing the Swans?
That's good.
Out-sing the Swans. Yeah, but we should, Chris.
I know we should.
There's about five of them turning up on a skateboard. We should out-sing them, for God's sake.
Is there a game in recent memory that rivaled the atmosphere for the Ipswich game? I guess Man City is probably the obvious one.
That's the first one. As soon as you said it, that's the first one that sprung to mind. And that was a similar situation, wasn't it, in that... We didn't expect much. I remember talking to fans before that game and Norwich's injury list and everybody saying this: we could be threatening the Ipswich 9-0 here.
Yeah.
That was the expectation. And they turned up and produced an incredible performance. And the atmosphere that night, that's lived long in the memory. I think that you had the Spurs away cup tie, the penalty.
Yes.
I know, just in the away end. Speaking to people, that day.
No tomorrow.
But because we've then had lockdown and a couple of poor seasons since...
Yeah.
There hasn't been anything to match it for quite a long time. So it's nice, finally, after four or five long years of not having much to shout about at Carrow Road, and when there was, the place was empty, to actually have that back...
That's encouraging.
It's really, really good.
Right, let's get on to the Twitter questions.
Let's. Right then, time for the questions. Statements, rants, raves, and all sorts of other things that we have now, Chris. Ollie is first off the line here. He says, Chris Gorham is the best commentator around. Question for him... What's the best moment you've commentated on?
Let's go away from the obvious goals. Has there been a moment that hasn't been a goal?
A moment that hasn't been a goal? I suppose it would be, you're looking at final whistles, aren't you?
Yes.
The final whistles when, like the Man City game, winning at Wembley against Middlesbrough, those are the ones when nothing can go wrong now. It's done. The final whistle is gone and you can really go for it.
That's, and you've got to pick one. Well, I'm not letting you leave without picking one.
Whenever I'm asked this, the only commentary moment I've ever had in my long, long now commentary career, the only moment I've actually got a genuine head rush while commentating was when Nathan Redmond scored at Wembley.
A head rush?
Honestly, that I was waiting for Rob to be careful here. I'm going to calm down. Yeah. That was all the others have been great, and you know, but that's the only time I've thought we've gone 2-0 up very quickly. That's the only time I've been genuinely worried that I'm going to.
That's me every week.
Lose it. So that one for that reason, that just what it naturally in the moment, how I naturally felt.
Let's have a goal as well. Come on, the best goal you've commentated on.
Best goal. Oh, there have been some good ones, haven't there? You always think about Johnny Howson, don't you, against Forest?
Oh, I didn't expect you to say that. I'm going bananas over here, personally.
Yeah. Okay. You're talking about Simeon Jackson.
Of course.
Oh, I thought you meant in terms of a best goal.
Okay. So that's the best goal in terms of the goal.
Yeah.
That's
what it is. It's Redmond scoring at Wembley.
Okay, fine. That's
my favourite.
When it's close to a medical emergency.
There you go,
my favourite BBC Radio Norfolk commentary moment this season, it wasn't a goal, it wasn't a
I know what you're going to say already. It was brilliant.
It was Chris Gorham's genuine concern for when he lost his summariser.
Oh, Darren Kenton. Yes.
It's brilliant.
Darren?
And it's going, Darren's still not back.
Yeah, that was the one.
Where was it? It was away.
So QPR.
QPR,
so
that's right. Talk us through it for those who maybe weren't listening or were at the game.
So at QPR, where they put us to commentate is from the far side of the ground from where the press room is.
Okay.
So if you want a cup of tea and you're in the press, most grounds are, we're lucky enough to get a cup of tea if we want.
Yeah.
But it's the far side of the ground. So at halftime, Darren Kenton said, I fancy a cup of tea. So it meant, and Loftus Road's a really tight ground. So it's not easy. You have to push your way around almost the edge of the pitch, around to the other side, get your cup of tea, and then do the same journey back. And by the start of the second half, he still wasn't back. And I thought I'd be okay. And then I think Norwich scored, didn't they?
Yeah.
Norwich equalised.
Yeah.
Kenny McLean scored. That's it. And he still wasn't back. And then he appeared with his cup of tea and sat down. He just said, it's really difficult to get around. And I said to him, Norwich have scored, and he said, have they? Because it was the away team that had scored. There wasn't really a cheer when he was in the home end. So
my favourite bit about that was it was a good 10 minutes
after.
And if that's me, I'm super embarrassed. I'm so he just sat down like nothing had happened.
He was
absolutely brilliant.
He commentates like he played, like he's got all the time in the world, never flustered, and that's why we love
him. Was there a moment though where you're going, something serious might have happened?
Well, there is a bit of a dilemma because I can't go and look for him. Because if I put the mic down.
One moment, guys.
You'll just hope. And I can't ring him.
Yeah.
Because I'm on the air commentating. So Rob was with me. So I think Rob was trying to get a hold of him and texting him. So that's where you are. You're putting the fate into the hands of others and hoping that they might be able to trust
him. Well, I must admit, Chris, I just thought they'd run out of toilet roll.
Maybe it just got to a point. Maybe he never did have it.
There's another really good question for Chris. Come on.
This comes in from Katie. This first bit's for you, Chris Reeve.
Angus what?
Still deserves a Nando's for those saves, despite not getting a clean sheet. You're racking up a serious bill.
Yeah, he does.
For Chris Gorham, if you could choose anyone, who would be your dream guest summariser for a game?
Whoa, that's a cracking question. Now, I heard O'Neill doing commentary alongside Johnny Rowe earlier this season. I think if we did it one week, it would be a one-off and a possible career end. But there's a bit of that. Him and...
You'd have both of them?
Well, I'd have O'Neill, and I would love to have got Alex Tetti to do it as well. I feel we might have the same issue. On live radio, it's not easy to reach for the bleep button.
Yes, O'Neill is a problem for the bleeping.
If you're going to go out with a bat.
I think that, I think if you ever hear... If you ever hear Phil Daly, our presenter, handing over to commentary with Chris Gorham, it's my last day.
I was going to say, that could be a nice way to retire eventually one day.
That's the only video I've ever seen where people were going, Chris Gorham needs to watch out for his job. I mean, no one's come close to Chris, but they're going,
Yeah, right. They had some charisma.
You know, if Onel's injury doesn't heal up soon, then...
Yeah, I was a bit concerned. I saw the video of it, and there was a bit where Norwich were on the attack, and he was off making coffee. You think, now you're going to need to concentrate a bit more than this.
I've been listening to Darren Kenton.
What about this from Falcon17? We've got a bit of a canary conundrum here, okay? Chris Gorham, here you go. Would you prefer 20 years of being mid-table in the Prem, but Ipswich being on a 15-year unbeaten run, or the current position of yo-yoing, but us being the pride of Anglia for the next 15 years?
Well, that's a difficult one, isn't it? But I think you've got to sometimes take a step back, you've got to look at the bigger picture, and if Norwich could be an established Premier League club, then I assume that maybe Ipswich wouldn't be. So you've got that moral high ground then. Established Premier League. We've done the yo-yoing.
Yeah, that's true.
We've done the 15-year unbeaten run. We know what fun that is.
Right. Okay.
Can we try a bit of Premier League stability?
And people, I was having this discussion with someone else the other day, and they said, because there's still fans, aren't there? I don't think there's as many as people make out who go, oh, I prefer being in the Championship. The Championship's great when you're winning.
Yes.
And that often means you get promoted. The Championship isn't fun when you're losing to Blackburn.
Yes.
On telly, and you're going, oh, you're looking over your shoulder. That's when it's not fun.
And I've always said this. I think being in the Championship, it does feel fun at the moment. But I think, and I hate to admit this, because we've seen too much in football this week of the Premier League being the be-all and end-all and thinking they can rewrite the rules. But it is the Premier League existing and the chance to get there that makes the Championship exciting.
Exactly.
If there wasn't promotion at the end of it, if we were just playing for, oh, well done, you've won the Championship, it wouldn't feel like it does now. So,
and that's Chris Gorham saying, not just me, so listen.
Absolutely. Jack's got a worry. He says, is Sidney Van Hooydonk still alive?
Sidney.
Yeah, that's been an interesting
weird one, isn't it?
It is, and I think...
He is still alive.
I did see him. Still going. At Carrow Road, when the fans have all gone, they set up a sort of small-sided training game on the pitch involving the players who haven't featured, and he was playing that on Saturday.
Okay, so good.
He's definitely okay.
Yeah, good.
But yeah, you're right. It's that's the one little thing, isn't it, that in January Adam Eder went to Celtic and Sidney Van Hooydonk came in. And I know David Wagner sees Sidney Van Hooydonk in training every day and has a much better grasp on what his strengths and weaknesses are than I do. But you just look at earlier on in the season, games like Saturday when Norwich needed a goal, he was bringing on another striker when he had Adam Eder, and he's not doing that. He's using them very noticeably in different ways, which probably tells a bit of a story. But I couldn't tell you why that is.
I do fear that Van Hooydonk, for me, might be remembered in a similar fashion to Luciano Becchio, where he had that one good assist. Becchio had it against West Brom. I think it was the final day of the season when Housen scored that.
Completely pointless.
And Hooydonk had a nice one with Christian Fastnack. I can't remember who it was
against. It's a shame for Sidney. And maybe we should learn our lesson not to hype him up so much.
But maybe his moment is to come. Maybe that he's got one big goal in him.
Right.
And it'll be the moment that we'll go, do you remember that?
So,
he only came on, he scored one goal. Right. It was the one that got us to Wembley.
Right, so let's have a quick pause on that, Chris, right? Because I'm coming back to you. Right? Ashley Bootle has sent in a gets me going statement, okay?
Oh, okay.
Sun shining, May the 26th, Wembley. Sarge winner, 90th minute. Oh. See you there. Don't be late. Mm. So my question to you, Chris, is... what would get you going the most at Wembley? Think about your dream scenario, your dream winner. What would get you going the most?
We don't want another head rush.
Dream winner?
Oh, I so, no, no,
so
I want
on,
a head
so
rush.
Action, just
what would give you the
enough.
Biggest head rush?
This has
got to
be...
just take us through like a comment, like almost okay. commentate okay. the moment.
Okay, well, the moment that I predict we've got an Ipswich fan in our office.
Right.
And I said to him, I didn't really mean it, but I said at the start of the season that it will come down to penalties in the playoff final.
But
we've got the ace up our sleeve because we'll be able to bring on Tim Krul. But that's gone. That pre-season prediction is gone, hasn't it?
Yeah.
We've had a playoff final on penalties.
We've got George Long.
We've got George Long.
What would get you going?
All right, the one thing that I've never seen happen in football, and the one thing that I think we are due at Carrow Road at some point, because you think of all the things that have happened and this hasn't, okay? We're 2-1 down to whoever at Wembley. It can be whoever you want.
Yeah.
Get a corner. Up you go, Angus.
Oh.
He heads in the equaliser to take it into extra time.
Yeah.
And then let's just say he's the hero then on penalties as well. What about that?
Bloody hell.
That's the one thing. If you think of all the things that have happened at Carrow Road over the years, a goalkeeper scoring is one thing I've never seen.
I think your head would come off. Never mind head rush.
I think that's the one big thing that can happen in football that I've never seen in the
real life.
So there you go, Angus Gunn.
Goalkeeper scoring.
That would get him going the most.
The problem is, if Angus does score, we then won't have a commentator for penalties. Because Chris is on the floor needing sort of a sugary tea.
He can just make noises like we did after we beat Ipswich. Goes tribal. Go on.
This is a good one, and maybe more of a serious question for Ryan. It says, despite still being in a good position for the playoffs, do we still want Wagner here come next season? I felt as if too many times this season we let down by in-game management. That's an interesting one, because obviously Ben Knapper's come in. Yeah. You would suspect that he will want to at some point. And we're starting to see his identity being stamped on various parts of the club. For me, it's almost like you go out on a high. And for Wagner, that would be promotion. For me, regardless of outcome, I'd like to see someone different here next season. But
even if he takes us up through Wembley,
yeah,
mate?
I think so, yeah.
Wow. Well, that's a...
I mean, that's just my one. Whether that happens is a whole other matter.
I think it's interesting. If you go back 2 or 3 months, I think a lot of fans were saying that. Mm. And they were saying, we've seen enough this season and he's done his best. And at the end of the season, there'll be a change. Mm. And that's obviously what Knapper's waiting for. Mm. But if that is what Ben Knapper's waiting for, almost by doing nothing, he's made it more difficult. Yeah. Because now he's going to have... We've gone from Christmas time, halfway through the season, it felt like it wasn't working. It felt like it needed ripping up and starting again. Now, even if Norwich don't go up from here, even if they lose the next two games and they finish seventh, let's say, and they miss out on the playoffs, we're still going to be in a situation where it's, hang on, we're nearly there. How much of it does need ripping up and starting again? It's become a much bigger call now than at one point it felt, I think.
Well, I think at one point it wasn't even a debate. It was... You know, we will have.
I think when the sporting director changes, you assume that at some point the manager will follow, and it hasn't yet. Mm. And I think the longer it's gone on, the better David Wagner has done, the more difficult that decision has become. Mm. What's interesting to me at the moment is there hasn't been any announcement on players' contracts, and we've had David Wagner talking about how much he likes Sorensen, how well McCallum's done, as if he's saying, "Well, I would kick them." But so there's a little bit of reading between the lines and semantics going on at the moment as to who's saying what about.
And also, he commented as well, didn't he, on the squad being too thin as well, which is interesting. I think sprinkling that in is interesting. The players out of contract, because what you would say is David's got a fantastic rapport with his team and his squad. They all really respect him. They work for him. They hunt for him. They want to win for David Wagner. You can't debate that. There's no doubt about it, right? But on the other hand, despite that being completely settled and solidified and it's a good group and they're working well together, because so many players are potentially leaving in the summer, well, we're probably going to at least have six, aren't we? Maybe it is the right... I don't know. It's very tough.
I think for me,
if you go up at Wembley, that is just incredibly... That's just so harsh, isn't it?
I think the thing...
We're getting ahead of ourselves. Yeah, of course. Can we just calm down, please?
I think so many are guilty in football of holding on to the thing that's been good for too long, and it ends up getting a little bit, I don't know, stale or something. I think Knapper will want someone else. Yeah. Personally,
well, we'll see, won't we?
I've still got this nagging doubt in my mind that I think there's been occasions this season where Wagner's been let off the hook because of a really good squad. Sargent, best striker in the division. Gunn, best goalkeeper in the division. Sarah, best midfielder in the division. Okay. I would say,
but there are also squad. There are also clubs that have tried to make that big call and change everything, and then wish they hadn't.
Birmingham
is a great example.
Birmingham.
You know, Millwall this season thought they were going to go different and try Joe Edwards, and they changed it again. So this is a really difficult conversation to have without knowing what the alternative is.
Yeah.
You almost want Ben Knapper here with his PowerPoint presentation and his overhead projector saying, this is my vision, this is how I see it. Well, we can decide whether that we think that's better than... maybe he wants to stick with Wagner, I don't know.
Well, I understand that a PowerPoint presentation has been made and his vision is a thing, and those inside the four walls of Carrow are very, very excited by it. But as to whether that means a new head coach, I don't know. But what I do know is, regardless of who's coaching next season, will Norwich City fans understand how we play? So this is a great comment here from NCFC Adam.
The answer is no.
When will our fans learn that we're not a hoof it forward type team? Haven't they been watching us at all for these past 5 years? Let me throw that one at you, Chris.
So you're talking about when the ball gets played back to Angus Gunn's.
The moans and groans.
Are
you tempted to explain it?
Well, we try to during the game, but that question assumes the fact that football fans are a logical bunch while they're watching a game of football.
We're not.
We're not. Oh, you're watching your team and you're desperately need a goal. You think, oh, I'll get it at the other end. You don't behave during a football match.
Oh, God, no. We're
like
a pack
you
of
would
wolves.
In any other way. So I think you do have to cut the fans a bit of slack. And they're frustrated because on Saturday, Norwich aren't winning the game.
Yes.
So I can see it. But yes, you would like to think that... I thought the game where my mind really... I'm going back a few years now. The game that I thought really... could have changed people's perception was, do you remember the famous Millwall 4-3 when Pookie scored?
Yeah.
When Norwich scored twice in stoppage time? Yeah.
I was in Barcelona, dancing through the streets.
You remember it well then. Two very late goals, but they got those goals back not by, in a traditional sense, you would have just launched the ball into the box, wouldn't you? But they didn't. They just kept playing, kept passing, and ended up working those opportunities. And we had that very amusing interview with David Wagner earlier this season where he was talking about what stereotypical English fans are like.
Yes.
And he was just saying, oh, I know what it's like, put it in the box.
Yeah.
All that,
that
which
was
I
classic.
Thought was him,
that was a
him at his best. Yeah, it's not... No team, most teams play like Bristol City did on Saturday. We're not alone, are we, in this now?
Speaking of style of play, one of the things that I really want us to sort out before the Swansea game is we all love Jonny Rowe. Jonny Rowe is... my man, I adore the bloke. He can walk on water, build the statue, all of that stuff, right? I was extremely frustrated in the way in which we played. And I don't know whether it was just the dynamic of the game. I really hope that it was just the dynamic of this game. We didn't play the ball in front of Jonny at all enough for me. We relied on him coming deep to pick up the ball to then create that magic moment, as we've seen on so many times this season. So for me, against Swansea, I really want to see us use Jonny how we should. I actually think I would start him against Swansea as well. So I want to throw at both of you guys is, do you want Jonny to start? Do you not? And actually, what do you think we need to improve the most against Swansea? Chris, let's go with you
first. I think it's because I was talking about this on the radio on Saturday. And if you want to get Jonny Rowe in that team, as I think we all do, because it's what he's done this season, you are either going to have to leave out Barnes or Sargent or Nunez or Sarah. Who else? Well, Kenny McLean's going to have to drop out. So, or Borja Sainz. So you're going to have to leave out one of those players. And
tough call.
I think at the moment, Jonny Rowe's not 100% fit. Yeah. I like him as an impact sub at the minute. I'd like to see him back in the team at some point.
But Chris, we need to win this game at Swansea. We need to score early. That's Jonny Rowe.
When Jonny Rowe was missing, Norwich played 11 matches.
True. Won
7 of them.
Very true.
So he... when you look at what the impact that losing Josh Sargent had compared to the results-wise losing Jonny Rowe, they're two different things. But Rowe is a really important player. A lot of people are saying, well, leave out Ashley Barnes, play Sarah in the 10 and bring Rowe on the wing. But I don't know, does that then get the best out of Sargent? Because he's got the majority of his goals alongside Barnes. Otherwise, if you want to get Sarah more involved in the midfield, you've got to leave out Nunez, and that would be harsh on current form. I don't think any of those players that are starting deserve to be left out.
Okay, so I agree with that. So then the last part of that question is, what do we need to improve from that Bristol City performance to make sure we beat Swansea?
I just think move the ball quicker.
In midfield specifically or everywhere?
Just everywhere. There was a lot of players putting their foot on the ball and stopping, and I'm not, and I know your previous question about passing it back, I'm not talking about that.
You were booing.
Just sometimes you think, right, go on. Is that
opening
up a bit? And they weren't playing quite as off the cuff as they do when they're at their best. So yes, Jonny Rowe, fantastic season, big player. He's another one who will probably score another big goal before the end of the season. But
we hope so.
Does he deserve to start? Yeah, on this seat. But do any of those in the team at the moment, after 3 defeats in 19, do they deserve to be left out?
It's incredibly harsh.
I don't think they do.
What are you going with, Jack?
Jonny
Rowe, what do we need to improve for Swansea?
On a slight tangent, I was watching Jude Bellingham's interview after Real Madrid had just beaten.
Yes.
And he said the great thing with Ancelotti is that they're all free to do what they want to do. There's not like a set pattern of play that they have to go through. And that's what reminds me of Jonny Rowe.
Right.
We talk about vibes. He is the chief head of vibes.
Yeah.
He comes on
and
you go, I don't really know what you're going to do, but he had that pop shot against Bristol City at the weekend. I thought, that's probably going in.
Oh, by the way, what a move that was.
And then he was kind of getting the Barkley going. You never quite know what's coming from Jonny Rowe. I still don't quite know what type of player he is. I wouldn't say he's an out-and-out winger. I don't think he's quick enough for that.
Well, let's
he's
ask
not
the
a number 10.
Let's ask the question a different way then. If Norwich don't get the early goal and it goes a bit like it did on Saturday,
you bring
and it's 0-0 with who do you want to be able to bring on?
Oh, of course, Johnny Rowe.
So
I don't think you start him.
No, okay, fine. I'm happy to be bullied out of that. But let's hear it from the viewers and listeners. What are you going for? Does Johnny start? Does he not? And I tell you what I'm loving about Johnny Rowe at the moment. We saw it on Saturday against Bristol City, Chris. You could hear the noise from the snake pit in the bathroom when Johnny Rowe warmed up. And it actually reminded me of that Huckabee fear factor when we originally had him on loan before we bought him. And the crowd were really like, here we go. It's time for Darren Huckabee. And I felt that on Saturday. Here we go. It's time for Johnny Rowe. So he's such a secret weapon, isn't he?
He's a really exciting player. He's not... When Norwich had Darren Huckabee, he was seasoned pro at the absolute top of his game, knew what he was doing. Johnny Rowe's in his first season.
Good point.
There's a lot of potential there. And I think, I think David Wagner in recent months has earned the right that we've just got to trust him to use it in the best way. But certainly great to have him back. When you look at the strength of the Norwich bench on Saturday compared to previous weeks, starting to look much better, isn't it? And he'll play a big part.
You never answered the question. What do we need to improve to beat Swansea?
I agree. I don't think we moved the ball quick enough. I thought there was an element of doesn't really matter to an extent on Saturday. The outcome I didn't feel like.
Okay.
So I think there will be, as you say, we need to win on Saturday. We don't want our season going into the final day.
Against
we want
relegation
to be able to maybe
Birmingham,
rest someone that's, I think, is McLean on 9 yellows or something like that? Ooh. Is there risk around?
He is on 9, but that doesn't matter. There's a cut-off point for 3 weeks
Thanks,
ago.
Chris. But we don't want injuries or things like that going. And the reason the Johnny Rowe discussion is so difficult is because Matt's is a statement. If you're having a bad day at work, we're not, thankfully, to cheer yourself up, remember we got Borja Sainz on a free transfer. And Borja Sainz, particularly in kind of 3 months, he is another one of those. So exciting, so buzzy. I thought he was brilliant against Ipswich. The amount of times he dropped deep, picked up the ball. He's a player you must be really enjoying commentating.
Yeah, he is. And I'm going to use this as another way of just talking about what David Wagner has done this season. I think they signed Sainz in the summer. He was the summer signing that they were really excited about.
Yes.
You look at the way Norwich started the season, he liked Johnny Rowe, and he clearly wanted Barnes and Sargent up front together. So his David Wagner at the start of the season, his front four was Sainz, Rowe, Barnes and Sargent. Mm. I think those four players have been on the pitch together for possibly less than 2 games worth of time this season.
Right, okay.
They were all on Saturday, weren't they? So maybe that will have pushed it up. But those four, because of their various injury problems, I think those four haven't even completed 2 full games together.
Cool. Blimey, that's hard to believe, yeah.
Yeah, and that I think if you ask most Norwich fans, what's the most dangerous front four? That's what they would go with, and we've barely seen it this season.
Yeah, so that's true. That is
Ashley
very true.
Ashley Barnes is an I know you're a huge Ashley Barnes fan, Chris, but
loved it, Barnesy.
No, not loads of goals, not loads of assists, but it's interesting the way we've spoken. Most of those plans include Ashley Barnes. It shows that he is important to the way we operate.
Yes, I think it's you know those things that people say on social media, and then all of a sudden it sort of snowballs, and people start to use the same opinions. I think it's quite lazy to just come out with, I'll just drop Ashley Barnes. I think what you don't realise in the stand, what I certainly neglected for a while in the stands without, luckily, very fortunately, speaking to some of the players, is what Ashley Barnes does is he drags us up the pitch, and all of the best Norwich City sides over the years have a brilliant spine, and arguably a spine of leaders as well, might I say, right? And you've got Angus in goal that's barking orders now, which is brilliant. You've obviously got those defenders. Midfield, you've got Kenny, and up front, you've got an Ashley Barnes. So I think he drags us up the pitch. I think the ball sticks to him really well. Don't get me wrong. I know full well that he would have been, fairly frustrated with how his season has gone. I think people forget that it is his first season, isn't it? So I think that that's something to factor in. And as Chris has very rightly said, he was, they wanted him to work with Sargent, and Sargent's been bloody injured for most of the time. So I do feel for Ashley Barnes. I think it's quite... I think a lot of people are saying a lot of lazy things about Ashley Barnes, to be honest with you. I know that that will ruffle a few feathers, but I think it's the truth. And, I know it's not all about... again, a lot of people say, the whole nice guy thing or what he does off the pitch, that doesn't matter. For me, it matters. When you're at Norwich City, there's a certain way you should be within the community, within the squad, within the group, and with the supporters. And Ashley Barnes is absolutely that guy. He won the community award last week. I think is it called the community award? I think it's called the community award. Basically, the Norwich player that does the most for the community, they give them award. I think that's a great touch. That shows how much Ashley Barnes gives a shit. Unlike a lot of the Norwich players that have been before him over recent seasons, he really, really cares. And I'll share a personal conversation with Ashley. Why not? One of the things that all of the Norwich players that gave for the Big C fundraising that we did, Chris, they obviously kindly gave stuff to Adam Eder, to Angus, to O'Neill in a big sack and brought it round, etc. But Ashley Barnes was like, I want to meet you, Chris. I'm going to give it to you. So fine, more than happy to do it. Met outside the ground, and he came up to me and he went, Chris, I'm really sorry about the loss of your mum, and here's the shirt. And I just thought, like, the fact that he remembered that, again, it shows just how much of a top man he is. And I know lots of Norwich fans be like, but it doesn't matter if he's a top man, if he's not playing on the pitch. I get that, but I think we need to be really careful with some of the stuff that's being said about Ashley.
Well put.
In my opinion.
Well, you're probably not going to get an early summer holiday, Chris, with the playoffs. Are you...
Right. Come on, let's get this on, Chris. We need Chris Gorham. We need Chris Gorham in the hat, on the podcast to end it.
Well, it's embroidered wrong because this is obviously from the famous 2020-21.
Oh yes, all HMS 2020-21.
Piss the league.
Get it on for the thumbnail.
Yeah.
Piss the playoffs. Give us a vibes check for the end of the season.
Yeah.
How do you think that the vibes are going to play out?
Well, dressed as Captain Birdseye. I think we're in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think we'll do enough, and I think it will be done next week. And then, well, we're in the mad house, aren't we? Let's see what happens. Anything could happen. I think Norwich are going into the playoffs in better form than the league table suggests. I think they will end up playing a team that will feel very despondent and very disappointed. They haven't gone up automatically. If they can get a good first leg at home and that atmosphere is back,
who knows?
And don't
it's
forget,
possible. It's not by any means definitely going to happen, but it's possible, and it's much more possible than I thought it was going
to
be.
And don't forget to make sure you're locked in to BBC Radio Norfolk.
Absolutely, from now until we go up
forever.
Chris Gorham, thanks very much. Thank you very much. As always.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, Chris.
Thanks for watching. See you all very soon. Bye bye.